This is Monsterland Ohio Radio, episode number 44, Monster Bash Recap.
This is Monsterland Ohio Radio, the official podcast of monsterlandohio.blogspot.com. I'm one of your hosts, Mark Matsky.
And I'm your other host, Andy Matsky.
And today we are once again joined by the infamous Grampy.
Hello.
That's his twiddle.
Good to be here.
We are in fact back from Monster Bash a week ago. Today we were probably sitting in the dark watching some type of monster movie.
Wondering why we didn't sleep longer.
There's no time to sleep longer at Monster Bash because things are happening constantly from 9 a.m. until 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning and beyond. Now, we don't usually get that far, but there's never a dull moment at Monster Bash. What were your initial impressions of this year's bash? Before we get into specifics.
You, go ahead.
I thought it was kind of the typical Monster Bash, a lot of fun. The basic outline of Monster Bash is watch a movie, classic movie, followed by a question and answer session with one of the stars of the movie. And can't ask for much better than that, especially when you have folks like Terry Moore, who we were anticipating right about this time last Saturday, the star of Mighty Joe Young. And then they occasionally throw in a few other fun things like Saturday morning cartoons and Sunday morning shorts. This year featuring the Three Stooges and Little Rascals, Our Gang Comedy, and a Laurel and Hardy film that was a lot of fun. So it was fun. It was a good time. And even got to finally, after how many, three Monster Bashes or four that we've attended, got to go outside on Saturday night and watch the evening movie outdoors, just like the old drive-in, sitting on our outside chairs, and enjoying a nice, kind of coolish evening, but it was outside and it wasn't raining. So it was fun. Enjoyed it.
I really enjoyed it this year. I thought the movies this year were really good. There wasn't one that I saw that was like, like there may have been in past years. And just the quality of the movie and then like the guests who were there were really good. It was really enjoyable. Like with Terry Moore, seeing Mighty Joe Young was fun. That was lots of fun, seeing Mighty Joe Young on the medium-sized screen. It was really enjoyable. The character that Joe has in that movie is amazing. And then hearing Terry Moore talk was good.
It was good. Yeah, it was overall, it's a good show. I agree with what you guys have said so far. And, you know, I had my overarching point, I guess, with Monster Bash is that consistently it's exposed me to films that either I had heard about but never seen or had never heard about at all and was seeing for the first time. And I love that sort of surprise factor to it. It's always a lot of fun. And so we'll talk about the actual films in just a little bit. But before we do that, I wanted to read a letter that we got. And this is long overdue because Gary has written us a couple really excellent letters But this one seemed specific to what we were talking about today. And I'll just go ahead and read it at this point. Gary writes, "Loved your previews of Monster Bash and G-Fest. It makes me all the more determined to get there. Living in England and being on the tightest of budget means I have to choose my trips wisely, but these two events are definitely now on my bucket list. The way you describe Monster Bash reminds me of a very similar event held in Manchester, England every year, called the Festival of Fantastic Films. They show old Universal and Hammer movies, sci-fi, horror, and just about everything weird and wonderful in the monster movie genre, along with special guest stars and many vendors offering all manner of monster movie goodies. It's kind of intimate and relaxed and really fun. It's been running for 28 consecutive years, and still, the highlight for me was when I got to see the legendary Ray Harryhausen in 1990. However, I didn't think I'd get to meet the great man, as our first encounter at the festival was totally unexpected, and quite frankly, I blew it. I was between screenings on Saturday morning of the weekend and casually waiting for the hotel elevator to come to my floor. I recall I was making my way to the basement to see an 80s sci-fi movie, can't remember which one. Anyway, I heard the elevator arrive and the door open, not really paying much attention to anything in particular. I stepped in, kind of looking at the floor, and vaguely aware of one other person already inside the elevator. As the doors closed, I suddenly realized who it was. It was Ray Harryhausen himself. The man who I had come to see, my movie hero, just him and me locked in a moment of time. My shy young self was so taken aback, I couldn't think of a thing to say. He kind of smiled and went about organizing some papers he had in his hands. Of course, I had 100 questions I wanted to ask, but at the moment I became unable to say anything or even move. I just stood there awkwardly, feeling somewhat like one of Ray's stop-motion creatures between takes, waiting for direction. I simply just blew it. And what must have been no more than 10 seconds moving between floors seemed like an age. I felt pretty rotten and angry with myself for most of the rest of that day until the evening when in a packed hotel event room, Ray, alongside a selection of his original creations, gave a presentation on his wonderful career. Afterwards, he offered to take questions from his fans. Desperate to redeem myself, I kept my hand raised and finally, fortunately, got to chime in about his Medusa character from Clash of the Titans. An eventful weekend for me, now very fondly remembered. Warmest regards, Gary." Oh. Thanks for writing, Gary. I think if you've been to any sort of convention of this nature, then you can relate to that feeling of, oh my goodness, there's that person who you've only seen on screens, and then all of a sudden they're there right in front of you. And I had a little bit of that reaction this year when we saw an opening to go to Terry Moore's table. And I just all of a sudden didn't know what I was going to say or do. And Andy had to kind of prompt me to just go over there and start talking, which we did. And as it turns out, she was, of course, very warm and friendly and joked with Andy and I. And she actually, I think, was not joking when she said that she thought that we were brothers.
And I must look really old.
Yeah, let's do it that way. Because then she asked you, what's it like to have such a young father? And you just sort of laughed.
Yeah.
So that was a very cool moment.
She was very nice.
She was super nice and got...
In the photo with you two, she looks honestly happy, which makes me...
Yeah. Yeah. That's great. I was happy to find a even better poster reproduction than the one that I took, because it had her name on it. She was top billed on this poster, and she signed it right next to it. So that was great. So, Gary, thank you for writing, and I promise that on a future episode, we have to read your letter that you wrote in response to King Kong, because it really is very thoughtfully done, and I want to make sure other people have the chance to hear that. So again, back to the bash. Let's start with Thursday and talk really quickly about the movies that we saw. Thursday, again, to recap, if you listened to our preview show, we spoke a little bit about Thursday night at Monster Bash, which is actually a lot of fun and almost is the night that I look forward to the most, because it's nothing but watching whatever movies Jeffrey Curtis puts on the screen. And that's led to seeing some great films like Caltiki and others that have become favorites of mine. So what we were able to see Thursday night were a handful of films that were really exciting. One was, started out with a series of Universal monster movie shorts. I mean, they were basically boiled down to the best monster moments of those movies. What'd you think of those?
Well, it was fun. It was sort of like the Cliff Notes of the movies. And when the first one was over, I was, whoa, that was quick. But it got into all the really good parts of the movie and even really kind of included the plot points and he told it all in about, 4 or 5 minutes. It's about all it was.
I bet.
What did you think of those shorts?
They were great. I loved them. The Mummy one started, which was the first one. It was like, I know it's been a long time since I've seen The Mummy, but I don't remember it moving this fast. Yeah. And then it ended, I'm like, oh, it's a short version.
Yeah, very short.
Yeah, so it's all like all the monster money shots in those films condensed. So it was really cool, really fun, and it covered, like, there was 4 or 5 of them in a row. The other two movies we watched, I can't remember the order of it, unfortunately, but one of them was It, The Terror from Beyond Space.
Great movie. One I had never seen before. I really enjoyed it. I couldn't help thinking of, like, imagining in my mind a comic book where Martian Manhunter and It fight, because It's from Mars. I think that'd be really cool. But it was really good. I really, really thought-provoking. It's a very unique movie.
Is that the one with the grasshoppers?
No.
I'm sorry.
That's Friday. The Terror from Beyond Space is, very simply put, it's a movie about a group of astronauts who are on board a spaceship with a creature from Mars lurking in the quote-unquote basement of the ship. And some have suggested then that this was like a seed for the plot of the Alien films, which I don't know
it seems like
how
it.
Directly the producers of Alien were thinking of It, but it certainly bears a huge resemblance. It's the same scenario, anyway.
Yeah. I love how they're just like throwing grenades. And shooting at it.
Shooting guns.
Shooting
inside,
at it, yeah.
Has a bazooka at one point, and they're inside a spaceship. I don't think they're thinking
about
that.
Yeah, the bazookas.
Through.
Yeah,
it's just
I love
like,
that. Part.
It's like a camera pan from one of the hatches up to where the people are, and one just has a big bazooka. It's great. I love it.
Yeah, you just kept saying to yourself, don't open that hatch. Don't open the hatch. And they open the hatch.
Yeah.
And then the creature breaks through the hatch, which I'm gonna go.
Yeah. Yeah, okay.
And
that was a good movie, that.
And then
exciting.
And then the grasshopper comes and eats the ship.
Grasshopper. Space grasshopper versus Godzilla. Okay, the other film we saw that evening was Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, the version where Frederick March plays both characters.
Loved
Feedback.
It. Loved it. If I was directing a movie, a Batman movie with the Joker, I would have the person who is playing the Joker watch this movie. I just got a real Batman voice.
Yeah, you did. It got in character.
I would have the actor watch this movie because the character changes and how Mr. Hyde acts is just plain creepy.
Yeah, I hadn't seen that before and I just couldn't believe it was the same person. The makeup and the personality of Mr. Hyde just were completely different than the Dr. Jekyll character. But it was the first that's who it was. And in the credits, sure enough.
I did a little tiny research and found out that Frederick March won the Oscar for Best Actor for his portrayal in this
really?
Film. The first Oscar awarded to an actor in a horror film, and certainly deserving of it for the reasons that you've talked about, is that the incredible change between the two characters. It's unbelievable. I mean, you'd be, you know, I think most people would watch that film and just assume that it was a different actor portraying Hyde, and it's not.
Mm-hmm.
So just an incredible movie overall. In fact, it's probably the favorite movie that we watched of mine that entire weekend, and I don't recall having seen it before. I've seen pictures of Hyde in countless monster movie books,
mm-hmm.
but this is just an amazing retelling of Robert Louis Stevenson's story, and it's pretty.
How close is it to the book?
It's pretty close, and what it does is it retains the moral questions that the story is meant to raise.
Yeah, it's actually a short story when you get down when you actually read it, and I was surprised how short it was, actually. So it's not a full blown novel in that sense. Is it
close to the short story?
Kind of. If I remember the short story right, it really gets into the internal conflict within the character of Dr. Jekyll. I say Jekyll because that's how they pronounced it in the movie. Not the way everybody pronounces it now, Jekyll.
You're speaking like old Hollywood.
Oh, yes, Dr. Jekyll.
Mr. Jekyll. Sorry.
And the thing about it, watching this, is, you know, a couple things. One is, the story is not about a mad scientist, per se, with bubbling test tubes and just drinking some chemical compound. It's far more about what is good, what is evil, the nature of free will, and what happens when you use your free will to be evil. And it really is unflinching in its portrayal. I mean, Hyde is not just mean, he's sadistic and cruel. And the contrast between the good and the evil in one actor is tremendous. And the other thing I wanted to say about this film, not to spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it, but there's an amazing use of first-person perspective. On a number of occasions, you're either face-to-face with an actor, and the idea is you're standing in the shoes of either Jekyll or Hyde, or you're in Dr. Jekyll's shoes, literally, and you're watching yourself do the experiment and then go to the mirror and look into the mirror, and it's tremendous to me as far as a technique. And one of the creepiest scenes, I think, in just about any film, is where Ivy, who is, you know, the woman of ill repute who Mr. Hyde keeps returning to, she thinks she's finally free of Hyde.
Oh, yeah.
She's looking in a mirror, and you know that door is going to open behind her. And when it finally does, and it's Hyde standing at the top of the stairs, just the feeling of dread is really palpable. Mm. And it's an incredible movie moment.
We really liked this movie. We really did.
Yeah, it was good.
We're talking about it for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
It's great.
It deserves it, because that's, again, I think of all the movies we saw at Bash, that was my favorite one. So it was a great way to start out Thursday evening. And I think that was it as far as things that we watched. I don't remember anything else except for maybe a random trailer or something.
In between. The little, let's go to the labby
thing. Right, yes. Oh. Yes.
I think.
It's good to think.
I think.
Thinking is good.
Okay.
Friday, then, one of the things that got the day started, we're going to fast forward through some things, I think, unless you want to make extra comments. We watched Beginning of the End, a Bird Eye Gordon production where giant grasshoppers terrorize Illinois and ultimately converge on Chicago. Anything you want to say on Beginning of the End?
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed seeing the full, uncut MST version, non-MST version.
Right, that's what I noticed too, is that
there's plot points.
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah. There's more to it than, you know, what they can only allow for on MST3K with the shorter runtime.
I enjoyed seeing the mountains in suburban Chicago. Which you'll never see.
Yeah.
Bird Eye Gordon, you got your location for.
Yeah.
The effects were fun.
But it was well done.
And I used fun. That's what I really mean. The effects were fun.
They were fun. And right after the showing of Beginning of the End, Bird Eye Gordon was actually there. and he gave a short talk and did some Q&A, and what you're about to hear is his response on how difficult it was to achieve those effects or just get the principles of those effects, namely the grasshoppers, into the country.
Well, there's a lot of difficulty in, you know, making the whatever. And I like, for instance, there was a certain insect that I needed to enlarge, and the government said, "No, you're not bringing that insect into this country." So I went out to that country, and to make the close-ups and the internet. And then, I did all my own visual effects, all my own giants and stuff. So I went down there and filmed the creatures down there and then came back. And then one other thing, for shooting the giant rats in they wouldn't let me put the miniature lab in America on the American side, in other words. So I had to, same thing, we always had to make arrangements to shoot. If you won't let us shoot here, we'll shoot here.
But you always found a way to get it done.
Yeah.
Andy, you had a little interaction with Bird Eye Gordon and his daughter, correct,
yeah,
at their table?
Okay, so I walk up to get Bird Eye Gordon's book, because I hadn't gotten it, what was it, 2 years ago? 2 Monster Bashes ago, when we had seen him, and I wanted to get it. And I'm wearing a Indiana Pacers hoodie, because I like the Pacers. I go up, I get the book signed, and his daughter asks me who the Pacers are. She doesn't know. And so I tell her, and it was kind of this fun little telling about sharing the National Basketball Association love. It's fun. And I got the book signed and went on my way.
And didn't you tell me that when you went up to his table...
He was on his phone.
He was on his iPhone,
yeah,
right?
He was on his iPhone.
And his daughter had to kind of nudge him like, somebody's here at the table.
It was great.
That's cool. But that fits with his personality, right? Is that he stays up with technology and is right in there. Still plugging away. The next big event of the day was the talk that Stan Gordon gave. And it is a fairly new, in fact, he said this was the second time he's even given this particular presentation, Strange Aspects of the Elusive Bigfoot. Grampy?
Yeah, it was Stan Gordon.
Stan Gordon.
With his knowledge and all the experience he's had with reports from people and investigating reports and how he got into that, and it was interesting.
Yeah, Stan is fond of saying that the best witnesses are those who beforehand had completely dismissed the, possible existence of Bigfoot or UFOs, and now they saw something inconveniently, and they're forced to kind of wrestle with what could this possibly be, and that's more of a credible witness, of course, than somebody who's had a lifelong interest in Bigfoot and UFOs, and is, could easily see something because they sort of want to or fabricate that information. Because even to this day, there's really not much to be gained by stepping forward and saying, I've seen something. It's not like you're going to be showered with money. You might get a little attention for a short time, but...
15 minutes of fame.
Yeah. Beyond that, there's really nothing to be gained by doing that. Anything else you wanted to say about Friday during the day?
No. Dealer's room opened. Dealer's room's great.
Okay, then let's move on to the evening. Monster Bash turns into a concert venue on Friday night. Bash Boys were back doing kind of a mix of baby boomer classic rock and roll. And they were joined this year by John Babcock, who was one of the lead singers involved with a Beatles tribute band that played for a long time at Epcot Center in Disney World. Any thoughts or feedback on Bash with the Beatles?
It was enjoyable. It was lots of fun.
What'd you think of him as a recreator,
if you will? He did okay. Sometimes it was a little creepy, I'll admit, but it was good.
Creepy in what way? What
do you mean? His hair was perfect, and that took me aback. I'm like, oh my goodness, that's Paul McCartney. But, yeah, the hair is what's creepy. His head looks like Paul McCartney's head. He's like the same skull shape as Paul McCartney.
All right, they were playing the music I grew up with. So, that was my music.
Remember that?
Grampy, what'd you think of him as a Paul McCartney repristinator?
I think probably in the days when he was doing it regularly, he would have, I'm sure he was a dead ringer for Paul McCartney. Having seen Paul McCartney in his Beatle days on TV and in the movies, I think at this point he may have lost a little bit of his skill in doing that. But he wasn't with the rest of them either, rest of his group. He was just playing with a few of the Bash Boys here and there, and but he knew his stuff and knew how to get the audience into it as well.
Yeah, he's an experienced entertainer, without a doubt.
Yes. Yeah.
The thing I thought about is he was dressed casually here too. Imagine if he was dressed in the black Beatles suit or a Sergeant Pepper outfit, then he really would have been
creepy.
Yeah.
So then Friday night also means Mexican Monster Movie Night.
Oh boy.
And the highlight of that is, of course, free food.
Not the movie. Seriously.
Tacos and bean burritos.
Waking Grampy up.
Yeah. Are distributed throughout the crowd. And so that's always something to look forward to. This year's Mexican Monster Movie was Samson and the Vampire Women.
Which was actually a pretty decent movie. I recall the last one that I saw was really awful.
Wow. Now there's a comparison.
Yeah.
Robot versus the Aztec Mummy or Samson and the Vampire Women. I guess of the two, in their original states, that would be.
Yeah.
I had food stuck in my throat. I got like a piece of meat. That was distracting. I enjoyed it. Makes a great MST. The fight scenes are really long and boring, but they're just entertaining enough that you don't fall asleep. I'll put it that way.
Yeah,
too easily.
I agree with you. It's a perfect MST3K. It's not a perfect standalone film.
Whee!
It suffers, I think, from Andy hinted at this. It suffers from pacing. I mean, there's a stuff that goes on for too long nothing's happening really. But then there's moments like the vampire assistants running with their cape stretched out. And I mean, stuff like that is just gold.
They look like six-year-olds.
They do. I mean, that's what it makes me think of, is what everyone does when they're a kid and you have a cape. I mean, you're flying by running with your cape stretched out. And they do that repeatedly throughout the film. It's so entertaining.
The hovering bats were good, too.
Saturday began with other things, but let's go right to Mighty Joe Young. It was great, as Andy said, to see that on the medium-sized 16mm movie projected screen, and what sprang to life once again was the character of Mighty Joe.
That character is so alive and full of character. I mean, like, there's moments where he's just, like, when he's sitting in the back of the truck, he's just sitting there and he's like, do-do-do-do-do. It's so funny. I love it. Whatever pet I get next will be named Joe after Mighty Joe Young. As I get really quiet.
Oh, I thought you were going to say it would be a gorilla.
That'd be cool too. Sadly, I don't think that's legal.
Do you have a big flashlight you can give away?
Yeah, I'll trade one of my friends for his dogs a big flashlight and some coins.
The effects in this movie, I mean, Joe, like you said, is an amazing thing. And the other effects are jaw-dropping as well, like the destruction of the club. I mean, I just saw that again, and I thought, that is unbelievable.
I think that's all physical to scale. They must have. I don't know if there's another way you could do that. I mean, with the exception of, like, the tree falling on Joe, I think that was all them really destroying stuff, which sounds really cool. I wish I could be there. Time travel back to when they did those scenes.
And the burning orphanage in the final block of the film is just, it's unbelievable stuff.
The lion getting tipped over by Joe?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a really good effect. I really enjoyed that, because it's seamless.
Yeah, it was fun to see that movie again and realize how, you know, there's so many different parts to it. You know, you have the jungle. He's in the jungle and how he's really sort of defending his turf. And then she takes over and comes in and they're all amazed. Oh. And then we jump to the nightclub. And then, yeah, the climax with the orphanage. It was really, really good.
And at the conclusion of the film, Terry Moore, the star of the show, was brought to the stage. And here is a portion of her interview.
Well, the director did a very interesting... Oh, that director. He became my friend forever. He had directed, had been the cameraman. When the cameraman used to be the director because they'd hold the camera and direct it. And he had done King Kong, Chang-Chi, Four Feathers, and Now Mighty Joe Young. But he had lost his eyes in World War II. So he directed that film blind.
Oh.
Yeah. And I so believe what I'm doing that I really believe Mighty Joe Young was there. And one of the questions everybody asked me was, do I play the piano? I don't, but I did play Beautiful Dreamer. I learned to play it for the movie.
Oh.
Yeah. And I became very good friends with Primo Canero, who had been the heavyweight champion of the world and then a wrestler, and Man Mountain Dean and the Swedish Angel. And they used to take me to wrestling matches with them. Can you imagine the four of us coming in?
More questions for Terry Moore? Okay.
Oh, yes. I mean, they had done all these pictures together that I just mentioned, and Marion C. Cooper had been was a general. And so he was so funny because sometimes he'd stamp up on his hat when things weren't going right. He'd throw his hat on the floor and jump up and down on it, and he said, I don't want these $250 a day extras. So they got extras and same ones and paid him $500, and then he was happy. He was a great man, and my Maggie here, and she's got me going to it too, we go to his daughter, Marion C. Cooper's daughter, who's the top pulmonary doctor at Cedars, Cedars, in Los Angeles.
You also mentioned Mr. Schoedsack, right?
Yes. Oh, Mr. Schoedsack is the one who directed the movie Blind, and his wife wrote the movie, Rose. And when it was over, for the rest of my life, until he died, he'd have me over for lunch. She would cook lunch, and we'd go into the living room, and he would play classical music and taught me music appreciation. So I stayed friends with him forever. And there's hardly a day goes by that I don't think about him. He was about 6'5", and... He fought with Lawrence of Arabia, and they were really adventuresome men, these men. and they had all been friends forever. So it was great doing that and working with Ben. One day I said to Ben, how did you get in pictures? Because this was his first movie. And he said, you remember that there movie, The Outlaw? I said, yes, thinking that he'd say I start one of the starring roles. He said, I brought the horses out for that there picture. Yeah, and Ben was the champion calf roper of the world. He was a real cowboy.
That was Terry Moore. What'd you guys think of her at age 88?
All that she was a part of and all the people she knew from Hollywood and just her life and stories from Making Mighty Joe Young, it's amazing.
Yeah, and she mentioned that she was the third woman in the world to be certified as a jet pilot, that she had her pilot's license and was certified for jets. That was pretty amazing and, you know, very, very interesting life.
You know, I haven't seen her in any other films, but she's just perfect in this role as the, you know, really the friend of Joe. And this is really...
I just want a giant gorilla Joe.
That evening, setting up the outdoor film, was the interview with Gary Clark and Gary Conway. And Andy, I know you have some stuff to say.
That was so much fun. This was probably my favorite thing. One of my favorite things. Because they were like cracking one-liners with each other. They were joking around. They were having a good time. And so the audience had a good time. So, I mean, it was so good. It was so good.
And you got each of their signatures.
I got each
right?
of their signatures. They're right over here.
Yeah.
Somewhere. Oh, there it
is. And an interesting point is that they really, they said they hadn't seen each other since they made the movie. And
it was like
their old buddies just ragging on each other the whole time.
It was so good.
And they hadn't missed a beat. A lot of old guy jokes.
They were funny jokes.
Which, you know, gets a little close to home sometimes, but for us old guys.
They were funny jokes.
But they were funny, yeah. It was
funny
it was
old
good.
Guy jokes.
Well, as we've stated before, that's sort of the key demographic of Monster Bash.
Yeah.
Is not necessarily the youngsters, but that set up How to Make a Monster, which was the outdoor film. As Grampy reported, the weather was great and very comfortable to be outside on a June Saturday evening. Tell us a little bit about the movie itself. What's the basic plot of How to Make a Monster?
Basic plot is that the makeup artist of the studio has been informed that he is on the way out. There are new owners of the studio and they have a different vision for what the studio is going to be, and in realizing that his job is pretty much over, he is going to get revenge. And using some of his skills and some other secret formulas, he gets his monster creations to do his dirty work, and one thing leads to another, and the studio is destroyed.
Yeah. Andy, your thoughts?
I really enjoyed this movie. I found this movie to be a really, I don't know how to describe it. It was so unique. I've never seen a monster movie like this. I mean, yeah, you have Mad Doctor creates creature and creature goes on rampage, except the creature is in makeup. It's not actually the monster. It's just so unique. If you can track it down, I think it's on Amazon Instant Video. I don't think it's Prime, but I think it's on Instant Video. And it's really good. I'd recommend it. I enjoyed it very much.
And I think the actor who portrays the makeup artist did a really convincing job of being, you know, weird enough to hatch this type of plan and vindictive. He's unsettling, and I think that's exactly what was needed in that role.
And to start off, you're kind of sympathetic toward him because, you know, this guy's been at this for years and years, and now he's been let go. But then you start saying, oh, that's not nice.
Yeah, right.
I hope those weren't the original props. That's all I have to say. In that final scene, I really do.
Oh, yeah.
They couldn't have been.
Makes you wonder. All right, should we go to Sunday?
Yes.
Ready to go down to Sunday? One of the interviews that was given on Sunday was Veronica Carlson. She was in Hammer horror films and other productions besides that. She gave, you know, I have to say, without having a huge knowledge of her work, she gave a very enjoyable interview and certainly seemed to be pleased to be at Monster Bash and so forth. Grampy, you were in there with me. You had any reflections on Veronica Carlson's interview?
Since I really didn't know who she was, I mean, I'm not that familiar with all of those movies. I didn't know what to expect, or wasn't expecting anything in particular. But it was interesting to hear how how their careers and how things went. I think it's always kind of interesting sitting in these Q&A sessions that people bring up questions sometimes from, you know, small parts of movies, and, you know, they know more about these movies, I think, sometimes than the actors and actresses do, because they're more sometimes technical questions that are being asked, and the person in the movie really didn't have a lot to do with that. There are some very knowledgeable people in the audience very often in these situations. But it's always interesting to hear some of the stories, and it's kind of fun to watch these actors and actresses reminisce about something that happened 50 years ago, or, you know, around that amount of time. And yet it comes back to them, and you hope they're not just making stuff up to satisfy somebody's curiosity. But
like telling a fake Bigfoot story.
Oh my goodness! The elbow has been dropped.
But here's an example of, I think, what Grampy's talking about, as Veronica remembers working with Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee.
I used to marvel at these people and watch them in the dressing room, the hair and everything, and come out and be different people altogether on the set. It was fantastic. It was a game of let's pretend, you know. And I remember the kindest thing that Christopher did, he did a lot of kind things, but the very sensitive, most sensitive thing he did for me, I was supposed to be thrown to the floor in the cellar scene, and I had to look up and see him and be mesmerized and terrified and frozen. And Freddie had said to me, "This is your eye line, darling. You look at my hand, that's where you're going to be looking." And the deep voice from behind in the darkness I couldn't see into was the voice that said, "I'll be her eye line, Freddie." And Christopher stepped forward and acted as if he were in the scene with me, reacted and glared at me as he would have done. And that's, I was so there, and until then, and that made that scene wonderful for me. And I have never forgotten it, and I've always mentioned it everywhere I've gone. And apparently I learned much later that somebody did it for him when he was a young actor. Did the same thing, the same generosity, and he'd never forgotten it, and that's why he always remembered and did it for others. So I was so grateful.
Another part of Sunday morning was a brief tribute given to Joe Ziegler, who was one half of the Ultimate Abbott and Costello tribute show that made the first Monster Bashes that we went to so attractive and fun. We lost Joe in the past year, And so Bill Riley was on hand, Jason Crutchley was as well, to talk a little bit about their memories of Joe. And one of the things that they were able to do was find some old footage of the first bash that they were there in character as Abbott and Costello. And so here is an audio version of the footage that was shown Sunday morning.
Bash 2002, and here we are, and my goodness, it's Button Lou. How are you guys doing today?
Fine, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
That's great. How many Monster Bashes have you been before, Button Lou?
This is actually our first real Monster Bash.
We've monsters in our day. We've met Frankenstein Monster, Dracula, and the Werewolf, and the Mummy.
This affair today.
Oh, it's here today.
Yeah,
this is the
first time.
We're having a wonderful time.
There wasn't another man's question.
People, I heard the man.
Okay, well then pay attention to what he says and answer what he asks. You have to be very, very careful about what you say in a place like this. You open up your mouth and you don't say anything. You don't give the people what they want to hear. You don't give them proper answers. I have to teach you everything. I have to explain everything to you. And what do you do? You stand there and you say nothing. All this time that we're here, I'm doing all the talking. I'm doing all the work. And what are you doing? Nothing. Always nothing from you. I can't ever get you to simply open up your mouth and answer a simple question. Why don't you just say something for yourself, Costello?
You go ahead and talk for her. I've been monopolizing the conversation. I don't want to be rude.
See,
go ahead and talk.
Nonsense talk again. I always talk, talk, talk all the time with you.
But I got one question, Ben Lou.
Sure.
Which way is Niagara Falls?
Don't get excited. No, please, don't.
Why are you going to be nappy or something like that for? He's trying to give me chills on my hand.
Don't get upset. Don't get upset. The man didn't mean anything by it. He was just trying to ask a simple question.
Lexi, you know, they asked him who's going first.
Oh, sorry. What?
I didn't hear anything. You heard me anyway, did you?
Of course, I heard you. That's the man's name. I keep trying to
tell
you.
That's his name?
Yes.
It's on tongue.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who?
The first baseman.
Who is on first, Lou?
What are you asking me for?
I'm not asking you. I'm telling you. That's the man's name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
Yes.
The guy on first.
Absolutely.
The first baseman.
Who?
I ain't going no place with this guy. I've been asking for years.
I keep trying to explain to you, but you don't ever listen to me when I give you explanations.
All you do is talk, talk, talk. You don't say nothing.
I don't understand.
Hey, what makes a balloon go up?
That would be hot air.
What's holding you down, bro? I got him. About time.
Always nonsense from you. If I apologize for my partner. He's just such...
For me?
I apologize for you because there's always nonsense coming to your mouth. Didn't you go to school, stupid?
Yeah, I came out the same way.
You see what I mean? I'm sitting in the right place like this, and what do you start doing? You start doing silliness and craziness. This is a very classic place.
It is a nice place.
Very
it's
nice
a beautiful place around here.
I like it here. It's very nice.
Did you see that wall?
I see that wall.
Ain't that a beautiful wall?
As walls go, it's very nice.
Do you know what that wall reminds me of?
No. What is that wall remind
me of? This one over here.
Oh, stop. Always nonsense for me. I mean, suppose you go over there and you bore a hole in that wall.
Okay, I'll go bore a hole in the wall.
Now, why'd you bore a hole in that wall?
You told me to go bore a hole in that wall.
And this has got nothing to do with me.
You told me to bore a hole in that wall. Being a dope that I am, I said I'd go bore a hole in a wall.
You have no reason.
If I want to get out of here, I have to go through a hole in a wall.
Of course not.
They have exits in here.
They have what?
Exits. E-X-I-T. Out.
What makes you so stupid?
It just comes to me natural.
All right. Well, stop me. Excuse us. Come on with me.
Goodbye.
And it's nice to get a goodbye from Joe. We loved him so much.
It was really enjoyable to see that. Just to see them do... They did almost every routine that didn't involve a prop in that little bit. And just to see them do it brings back a lot of good memories of previous bashes.
We were talking, and didn't we hear somebody say something about their special ability? Maybe it was Don
yes,
Reese.
Yes, it was Don Reese. Don Reese said something that was perfect. And this is what made the Abbott and Costello tribute show... This is what made the Abbott and Costello tribute show so special is the fact they could ad-lib in character. They weren't just doing their routines. They could respond to someone in the audience in character. It wasn't as close as Bill and Joe were to Abbott and Costello in their ways normally. It's not like they would switch back and forth. They would be Bud Abbott answering the heckler, or Lou Costello, and it was really great.
Yeah, and you know, earlier when we had a chance to talk to Bill, just the three of us talking to him, you know, he mentioned how he missed riding in the car with them, with Joe, on the way to different gigs that they would go back and forth like that, and he missed that. And you could see why he would, because they were so good at it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it made me doubly happy that we interviewed the full team when we did.
Yeah.
And you can go back in the Monsterland Ohio Radio catalog and listen to our interview with them. So wonderful remembrance now of extremely talented group in bringing those routines and those people and characters back to life. I will have to say this too. I enjoy Monster Bash a lot, and for reasons that I've discussed, but I don't think that the Bash will ever be as fun as it once was because of Joe not being there.
I agree. It's episode 22 they were on, in case you don't feel like looking on your own. Go 22!
And they would often show then an Abbott and Costello movie, like they did the other night. And when they did, it made you appreciate how good Bill and Joe were at doing what they did and honoring the memory of Bud Abbott and Lou Costello.
Kind of the last gasp of Bash for us was the Haunted Barn Movie Museum brought a lot of their collection.
That was so cool. I really enjoyed it. I know I say this is one of my favorite things, but this is probably like my third favorite thing. This is like, it was really cool because they had part of Gorgo. Gorgo. I mean, who knew that stuff even existed anymore? Right. It was just like, oh, we have this casting from this movie. And you're like, what? So, yeah.
A lot of stuff from Forrest J. Ackerman's collection. It seemed like pieces of the Brontosaurus from King Kong.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Some of John Chambers' original parts of Planet of the Apes masks. I mean, it was incredible. Really cool. And you could see people visibly becoming excited. Now, by Sunday morning, Bash is starting to thin out. But the people who had gathered for this particular panel, I guess you'd call it, you could see them sort of craning their necks to look closer, and when he said, come on up and take pictures, there was a lot of interested parties, myself included, trying to get good photos of what they had there.
He was, the guy who was giving the presentation was also excited. He was still excited and happy about what he had, and that made me happy.
Mm-hmm. So that was pretty much it. Then we hopped in the car and began the trek back home. One thing that I do want to say is a special shout out to Colin Richards, an artist that we've met at Bash. He did a couple commission pieces for us this year. That was a lot of fun. The first piece that we had him do was Mothman fighting Bigfoot with a UFO in the background, and that turned out spectacularly well, even better than I expected it to. And then the second one that we had him do was Godzilla fighting Gypsy Danger from Pacific Rim. And if you have any type of thumbnail image for the show, that's now the Monsterland Ohio Radio official image. So we've moved away from the little green and orange dinosaur.
Whatever that was.
We now have our very own, courtesy of Colin Richards. So check out colinrichardsart.com for more, and I know that he does commission work through the mail. So if there's some combo that you can dream up that you'd like to see realized, he does a phenomenal job, and just a great guy, too, to talk monsters with, because he's right on our wavelength as far as classic monster movies, MST3K, just a great guy to talk to.
And we wake up, and it's Friday morning. It was all a dream except for those movies. We're fighting with a knife.
Yeah, right. We fall off the pier into the water.
Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, yeah. We really didn't touch on that. Gramp, you got to jump in here.
Yeah.
We're trying to move things along, but I know that there's something you want to...
One of the highlights for me on Sunday morning was the Sunday morning film shorts, where they had two Little Rascal or Our Gang comedy routine or movies. Boy, I grew up watching those on TV, and one of my favorites was always Kid from Borneo, and I got to see that, and if you would have put a camera on me watching that, you would have seen the biggest smile you've ever seen, because it just has one of my favorite taglines from a movie, yum yum eat 'em up, and that I enjoyed. I think as I look back on the whole weekend, that's probably my favorite thing.
You were having fun watching it.
I enjoyed that.
No doubt about it. I was having fun just watching you have fun.
I was having fun watching you have fun. Wow,
it's like a circle of great fun.
Happiness circle.
And then the Laurel and Hardy movie, too. We started imitating them among ourselves, and that was fun to do, too.
Final thoughts, Andy.
Bash was great this year. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed A Kid from Borneo, because I've never seen that before. Just to see Terry Moore is a highlight that I will remember for years to come.
Grampy.
Yeah, now that we got to mention Kid from Borneo, that was fun. I enjoyed it, and I think the excitement that we brought along and brought home with us might even get Grammy to go next year.
Whoa.
Get Grammy to Monster.
You heard it here first. All right, so if you, like our excellent listener Gary, would like to write a letter, you can do so by sending it to moradio@outlook.com. Continue to watch for updates on our Twitter feed. That's MOR Podcast. And we've enjoyed sharing our Monster Bash experience with you. If you would like to learn more about Monster Bash, you can go to creepyclassics.com. You can also go to monsterbashnews.com for all the latest updates. I know that they're already accepting reservations at the Monster Bash Hotel for the 2018 Bash.
This October, an avalanche of terror. It's the Monster Bash Octoberfest Movie Marathon. The entire Universal Frankenstein film series on the big screen. On Friday, Frankenstein, the Bride of Frankenstein, the Son of Frankenstein, and the Ghost of Frankenstein. On Saturday, Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, House of Frankenstein, House of Dracula, and finally, the classic Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. Don't miss your chance to see Boris Karloff, Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney Jr., Colin Clive, Basil Rathbone, Lionel Atwill, Maria Ouspenskaya, and a slew of others, together on one of the biggest movie screens in the state of Ohio. The entire Universal Frankenstein film series, the way they were meant to be seen. The Monster Mash Oktoberfest Movie Marathon. The classic monster experience of a lifetime. Make your plans now. We will see you there.